My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid of public speaking, making a mistake at work, flying on a plane, losing someone you love, or even dying yourself? What angers you? Are you angry at our political climate? Your neighbor's dog that occasionally soils your sidewalk? Your neighbor? Your spouse? Or even yourself? What are you addicted to? Are you addicted to your cell phone, social media, shopping, food, sex, alcohol, drugs, or even to a person? Is there a simple, natural way to transcend fear, anger, and addiction and find the life of peace, security, and happiness that is your birthright? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dean Sleiter, says there is. Dean Sleiter has taught natural methods of meditation and awakening since 1970. A grateful student of Eastern and Western sages in several traditions, Dean has completed numerous pilgrimages and retreats in India, Tibet, Nepal, and the West. He is known for conveying authentic teachings in the forms that are relaxed, accessible, and down to earth. Dean gives talks, workshops, and retreats throughout the United States and beyond, from Ivy League colleges to maximum security prisons. His media appearances have included National Public Radio, The New York Times, New York Magazine, Coast to Coast AM, The Dr. Oz Show, and, the Oprah Winfrey Magazine. When not writing or teaching, he narrates audiobooks, makes music with a ukulele, and happily tools around town on his Vespa. His highly acclaimed books include Natural Meditation, an Amazon number one stress management bestseller, and Nautilus Gold Medal winner for the best mind, body, and spirit book. His website is deansleiter.com, and he joins me this week to discuss his latest book, Fear Less, Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, and Addiction. Please welcome to Destination Unlimited, Dean Sleiter. Good evening, Dean.
Good evening, Victor. It's great to be here.
And thank you so much for joining us, because I think your book and what you have to share is so, so important, especially in today's climate. So let's start by sharing with our listeners a little about you. You've been teaching meditation since 1970, making you one of the pioneer teachers in the West. Please tell us about your early life and how you found yourself on this path.
Well, I started my life in Long Island. I had no choice. That's where my parents had me. And I found even from an early age that I was, you know, wondering about the big questions about the nature of life. And I had a few actually quite dramatic experiences that were really, I realized later on in hindsight when I started reading about these things, that they were really experiences of spontaneous awakening. The most dramatic one happened when I was 11 or 12 years old. By then we were living in Los Angeles, and my mom had sent me out to the garage to clean out our Nash Rambler station wagon, which gives you an idea of the date. We were going to go see a drive-in movie that night, which also dates this story. And I had two brothers, and of course the backseat of the car was filled with our toys and our comic books. So I was out there cleaning it out. And my mind, as usual in those days, was just going, whacka, 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 whacka. Just what about this? What about that? Really in a very agitated, worried state, which was pretty habitual for me, even at age 12. So the next item that I pick up is a Mad Magazine. And on the cover, as always, was Mad Magazine's idiot mascot, Alfred E. Newman, you know, with his grinning gap-tooth smile.
What,
and
his worry?
Yes, and his motto, what me worry. Now, believe it or not, I looked at that, I read those words, what me worry, and my mind went, It just stopped. And I realized that this thing I'd been doing for the best part of 12 years was called worrying. And that I, on some level, had been choosing to do it, and therefore I could choose to stop. And I stopped. My mind, it just went into a deep state of silence. And it was really like the top of my head just opened up to the skies. And I went into what years later, you know, reading the books, I said, oh, that's what they call samadhi, satori, kensho. You know, a deep, deep glimpse of just boundless, blissful awareness. And I stayed in that state for the whole rest of the evening. The whole time we were watching this dumb movie, it was a Troy Donahue movie, and I was just in the backseat just floating in bliss.
So your first guru was Alfred E. Newman, and your first mantra was, what me worry?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
And what happened after that?
What happened after that is what happens to all of us, which is, you know, high school and all of those traumas and being introduced to, you know, all that fear of, at least for me anyway, you know, of the opposite sex, the fear and the yearning and all the social pressure and all of that. And, you know, I navigated it as best I could. And even then, I was having certain persistent, spontaneous awakening experiences. One that the best I can describe it is it was as if I had no face. It was as if everyone else had faces, like they were zipped closed in the front, like the seam in the front of them was closed, and I could feel that I was not zipped closed in the front. That it was as if I was open. There was I was just, I was openness. I was boundless, and it kept surprising me that people thought I was like everyone else. They talked to me as if I had a, as if I was closed behind the face like everyone else. I'm not sure if those words can convey the taste of the experience to other people, but that's the best I can do.
Did you discuss what you were experiencing at the time with anyone?
It never occurred to me to discuss it with anyone. Mm. I don't know why. I never even thought much about it. Just the stuff would come and go, and I would say, It seemed kind of familiar. In fact, my earliest such experience, I was about 4, is before I could read. I was with my mom. We were still on Long Island. And she was visiting a friend, and they were doing some boring grown-up talk. And so I wandered across the living room to where I found a book. It was on a coffee table, or I pulled it down off a bookshelf or something. And I opened it up, and there was a picture. I'm not sure if it was a drawing or a photo, but clearly it was a picture of a guy sitting in the lotus pose in meditation. And there was an instant feeling of complete recognition. And actually the thought that went through my mind was, oh yeah, that's me. Not literally, oh yeah, that person is me in a different lifetime or something, but oh yeah, that's what I'm all about. That's what I'm here to do.
Fascinating. So, who are your spiritual teachers?
Well, I was fortunate in that in the next part of my life story is that in the mid-60s, I graduated from high school. I was starting to read spiritual books like the Tao Te Ching and the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads, which were harder to find in those days than they are now. And then I went up to San Francisco State College for my freshman year of college. After that, I dropped out. Just became a total hippie for several years, just hitchhiking around the country. But up there in San Francisco, it was the mid-60s. They had just loosened up the immigration laws. There was this rising wave of spiritual interest, and so everyone came to San Francisco. You had Swami Bhaktivedanta. After he opened the first Krishna temple in New York, he opened the second one in a storefront on Frederick Street in San Francisco. There was the Suzuki Roshi, opened up the first full-time Zen center in the U.S. There was there were wonderful, ecstatic Hasidic Jews. There were Sufis. It was just a smorgasbord of, you know, spiritual tasting menu, and so I tasted it all. It was a very fortunate situation.
Did meditation come naturally to you, or did you find it challenging at first?
I found it challenging at first because In all of that spiritual smorgasbord, I started off with a couple of Zen teachers. And this was, you know, formal, traditional Zen, where you have to sit stock still, and that way that you hold your body completely still is kind of the model for how you're supposed to be stilling your mind. And I couldn't do either one to save my life. And I've since discovered as a teacher that if you tell people, okay, don't move, if your nose itches, don't scratch it, then all they can do is think about scratching their noses. Whereas if you tell them, hey, if you need to move, move. If you itch, scratch, then interestingly enough, pretty much they don't have to. So, and you know, in Zen practice, they walk around behind you, and if they note that you're squirming around, they've got a stick that they whack you across the back of the shoulders with.
Martial correction.
Yes. Yeah. So I flunked out as a Zen student after about 3 or 4 days. And what happened next was, it was, again, very fortunate. I've just been so lucky in every step of this journey. What I realized quickly was that I needed to find the teachers who would teach meditation in ways that were accessible to regular, squirmy people like me.
And you know what? We're going to pick that up in the next segment. My guest this week is Dean Slider. He's the author of Fear Less, Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. And we'll be back with more of Dean after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Today we decided to walk to school.
The light counted. 15, 14, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted. I realized he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Come on, smile.
Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy.
Or maybe he's teething.
Maybe it's just a phase.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No Big Joyful Smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Dean Slider. He's the author of Fear Less, Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. And you can find out more about Dean and his book at the website fearlessbook.net. So, Dean, we were talking about your spiritual teachers before the break. Please continue.
So, I started to say that a glorious failure at Zen prompted me to look for teachers who would share authentic, effective ways to meditate that were really accessible to squirmy people like me, like most people. And the person that I found was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who introduced to the world what he called transcendental meditation. And the principle of transcendental meditation is that the mind is always spontaneously attracted to something that's more enjoyable. So that, for instance, if you're standing in line at the Ben and Jerry's and looking up at the menu, well, what do I want? What you actually want is boundless happiness. You want, you want nirvana. It's not on the menu, so you settle for Cherry Garcia or something. But your mind is always being drawn to more, every moment, really. We're just like heat-seeking missiles. We're happiness-seeking organisms. In your choice of a mate when you're channel surfing, that principle is at work guiding your every action in every moment. So the way the transcendental meditation works quite brilliantly is to just allow that natural tendency of the mind to take over, that kind of gravity to take over. So instead of us trying to, so to speak, flatten out all the waves of thinking on the surface of the mind, just allow the gravity to pull you down into the silent depths. And you don't have to go far. A foot or two below the surface, it's silent down there. And, Maharishi just said, yeah, do this, twice a day for 20 minutes, and you don't have to change your lifestyle, your philosophy. It doesn't involve concentration or effort. You let nature do it instead of you trying to do it. And by golly, he was right. It really worked.
How do you find your teachings today? How are they received as compared to when you started 48 years ago?
It's the atmosphere is so much more receptive now. I quickly became a teacher of transcendental meditation, and I was very excited about sharing what I learned from Maharishi. And I was I taught all over the U.S. I taught in places like New Orleans and Las Vegas and Philadelphia and Iowa and Nebraska. And in those days, every public talk that I gave, I had to start by making a couple of jokes about, flying carpets and beds of nails, just to make the point that this is not what it is. Now, by now, everyone has at least, a brother-in-law who took a meditation course at the Y and it lowered his blood pressure. Everyone knows that it's good for you. The piece that's still missing for most people is they think it has to be difficult. Because they think of meditation in terms of concentrating, stilling the mind, getting rid of thoughts, all these things that no one can do. I can't do that. I've been doing this stuff for close to 50 years. And the good news is you don't have to. You just let gravity take over, as I learned from Maharishi in my practice of TM. Now, after some years, I moved on from TM. I don't teach TM specifically anymore. Some directions of the TM organization were not working for me. They started charging lots of money, which was really not my idea, and so that made me move on. I once again got kicked out of that nest and discovered that this tradition of effortlessness, it exists in other lineages as well. So I studied with Buddhist teachers that had a similar approach and Advaita teachers who had a similar approach. So when I teach these days, it's not in terms, it's informed by all of those traditions and I have great respect for them, but I teach in plain English, plain American.
Now, after speaking with your wonderful publicist, Sarah, I realized that we should probably devote a full show to your best-selling book, Natural Meditation, and we're going to do that in the near future. But for now, and especially for our listeners who may be finding developing a practice a challenge, please share a few basic concepts to help them meditate naturally.
Yeah, first let me point out that the easiest way for them to do that is if they go to my website, and this is completely free. On my website, if they go to fearlessbook.net, there's a page on the website which is Meditate Now, and there I've got streaming audio tracks of guided meditations, so anyone can access those. The main thing is when people say, well, I tried to meditate, but it was hard, and I tell them, no, you tried to meditate, and therefore it was hard. The whole principle here is that any effort to create a non-agitated state of mind is itself a form of agitation. So it's really self-defeating. It's again like trying to flatten out all those waves on the surface of the ocean. So it's really just a matter of looking around. There's so little to it. That's really why it takes guidance at first, not because there's so much to it, but because there's so little to it. People are always trying to do more. Well, okay, should I concentrate? Should I try to feel happy? Should I try to control my breath? And it's no. Don't worry about any of that. That essentially it's, you notice right now you're aware, right? You're aware of the sound of my voice. You're aware of the colors and shapes in the room, or if your eyes are closed, you're aware of the more subtle colors dancing behind your eyelids. You're aware of thoughts coming and going, feelings coming and going. You're aware of all that stuff. And it's all changing, and it's all beyond our control. Now, the one thing that does not change is the fact that we are aware. So awareness itself is like an open sky. It's just like open, empty space. And within that sky, all the other experiences that come and go are like different breezes blowing through the sky. So essentially, it's a matter of, okay, just let everything come and go as it comes and goes, and remain as you already are. Remain like the open sky.
Like Yoda would say, try not, you will, where you will be.
Right.
What was your motivation for writing Fear Less?
Well, I'd been writing books about meditation and other assorted fun topics, by the way. I wrote one book called Cinema Nirvana, Enlightenment Lessons from the Movies, where I show how all these teachings are there between the lines in, you know, Casablanca and Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. That one was a lot of fun. But what I realized is that in recent years, there is just so much fear and anxiety and anger and addiction in the air. It's like epidemic. Anxiety in particular, you know, the kids in college campuses are lining up at the counselor's offices to talk about anxiety. And for whatever reasons, you know, there's the political craziness in our times, a lot of economic insecurity. Also, we have the first generation coming up, which grew up with cell phones and being, you know, constantly, essentially with cell phones there and being on social media all the time, they're carrying in their pocket the horrors of the high school lunchroom. You know, and this person likes you and this person doesn't like you, and you're kind of living in that world all the time. So there's this incredible anxiety going on.
How did that the recent political climate, the election, contribute to this?
Well, I think that whether you're on the red side of the divide or the blue side of the divide, you know, there's been a lot of, let's say, disruption. Things are, there's a lot of chaos in the air, and you know, I think a lot of people are, and I want to be a little bit careful here because as a teacher, I try to avoid ever endorsing one, you know, political view or another. I try to have my teaching accessible to everyone. But whatever your view is, let's just say things politically are moving in a much less orderly and predictable way than they've been, and that seems to be creating a lot of insecurity and a lot of people fearing for the future and fearing for the future of social institutions and democratic institutions that maybe we used to take for granted.
How did you respond to the outcome of the election and the ensuing months?
Well, I actually have a chapter about that in the book, which I wrote the day after the election, and it's really kind of my moment-to-moment emotional roller coaster ride. The chapter's titled November 9th, 2016, you know, when it started to sink in what was going on and my emotional reaction. And it's interesting because, you know, there's a story, and Victor, you're probably familiar with this story, Ram Dass, you know, great, very wonderful, revered spiritual teacher. His most famous book is Be Here Now. And then a couple of decades later, in the mid-90s, he was getting older, and he got a contract to write a book on enlightened aging. And he had turned the manuscript in to his editor, the first draft, and he got a note back from her saying, well, you know, this is all very logical and plausible, but it's so abstract. It doesn't really convey in an intimate, personal way the trials and the anguish of finding the body starting to fail and get older. Can you bring more of that personal note? So that night he went to bed, and he was lying in bed wondering, how can I do that? How can I make the anguish of aging more personal? And then the phone rang, and he tried to get up to answer the phone, and he fell on the floor because he had just had a stroke.
Mm, yes.
And it was like, oh, okay, be careful what you wish for.
Absolutely.
Right? So in a way, I would say the election was my stroke. I was right in the middle of writing a book about fear, anxiety, anger, and addiction, and all of a sudden there I had it in spades. Fear, anger, anxiety, not addiction. I probably ate a lot more cookies for a while before. But
We're going to pick up on that thought after the break. My guest this week is Dean Slyter. He's the author of Fearless, Live Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. Dean, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
They can get my book anywhere that fine books are sold. I like to support local independent bookstores, but also on Amazon. They can also go to my website, fearlessbook.net, where they can read a chapter, and there's a link there to order the book.
And we'll be back with more of Dean Slyter and Fearless after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You accidentally cut your daughter's bangs unevenly. Do you A, line things up a centimeter from her hairline?
Man, oh man.
No, sweatbands are so hot right now. Everyone's wearing them, like that basketball player and that other basketball player.
B, get spiritual.
Mom, where did all the mirrors go?
A reflection could never capture our true selves.
Huh?
Beauty is within? Om.
C, look on the bright side.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or D, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
Ta-da!
To...
Ta-da! Twinsies!
I kind of love it. As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information, contact You Gotta Believe at YouGottaBelieve.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Dean Slyter. He's the author of Fearless, Live Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. So, Dean, before the break, we were talking about your reaction to the 2016 election, which you have a whole chapter about in the book. What would you share with listeners who are still obsessing about it?
Well, if you're obsessing about the political situation or obsessing about your neighbor's barking dog or obsessing about anything, the words of wisdom that I would offer are actually the words from a 2015 Steven Spielberg film called Bridge of Spies, where, and it's the true story about Rudolf Abel, the Soviet spy who was captured in New York City, put on trial for his life. Fortunately for him, his lawyer is Tom Hanks. And, you know, anytime Tom Hanks walks into the room, you start feeling better about things. But Tom Hanks explains to him, he said, listen, don't trust and don't talk to anyone. The Russians and the Americans both want to send you to the electric chair. And Rudolf Abel, played by the brilliant Mark Rylance, replies, all right. And Tom Hanks says, you don't seem worried. And he kind of shrugs and says, would it help? So this expression, this question, would it help, is like a sword for cutting through all kinds of not only unproductive but counterproductive worry. Worry is, here's another form of the question that I would pose to people. You just kind of quickly review, think back over your whole life, from the moment of your birth up until this very moment. If you had done everything the same, except without the worry, what would that be like? Would anything be worse? Would anything be better? And I think the answer is clear. So this does not mean that when worry comes along, you know, it's a feeling, it's a visceral feeling. It doesn't mean to try to suppress that feeling. You know, the word suppress implies to press it down, and then it gets just pressed into the body where it can manifest as back pain or you know, stomach problems, something like that. But just to recognize clearly that worry doesn't help. And there are exercises for dropping it, and I give several of them in the book. One of my favorites is, you know, people are familiar with mantras like Om. There's a mantra that I love for cutting through worry, and it is, and there's a hand gesture that goes along with it. You fling your hands up in the air, and you say the mantra, Whee! And, you know, do that 3 times, and then try to be worried, try to be depressed. And there's a whole scientific explanation for why you can't be worried or depressed when you're saying we. It's called the facial feedback hypothesis, which goes back to Darwin. So these things, they're not just, you know, kind of airy-fairy thing, ways that we psych ourselves out. They all have a solid physiological basis.
It connects to the smile, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And as Thich Nhat Hanh says, sometimes your joy is the source of your smile, but sometimes your smile can be the source of your joy. That's the facial feedback. There's one bit of research that I cite in the book where they had a bunch of people watch a cartoon, and a third of them were told to hold a pen in their hand, one third were told to hold the pen between their lips, and one third were told to hold the pen between their teeth. They weren't told what the research was really about. And what it's really about is, if you're holding a pen between your lips, it forces you to frown. If you're holding it between your teeth, it forces you to smile. So they had the people watch the cartoon and then rate it, how funny it was. And the people that were holding the pen between their teeth all thought the cartoon was funnier. So the way we experience life, how funny it is, how fun it is, how joy-making it is, can be directly affected by just the fact of smiling.
Absolutely. You mentioned the concept of would it help, and it reminds me of the old joke of an elderly Jewish woman who attends a Christian funeral. She's sitting in the back, and she sees the gentleman in the coffin up in the front and the minister giving the sermon. And all of a sudden, she gets up and she exclaims, give him chicken soup, give him chicken soup. And the minister says, madam, it won't help. She goes, it won't hurt. So would it help? That reminds me of that old story.
Yep.
And that's a good mantra. Would it help? I think that's an excellent mantra.
Yeah. Yeah. Another way to phrase it, which I cite in the book, from the 6th century Buddhist sage Shantideva, who said, if there's a solution to the problem, what's the point of worrying? If there's no solution to the problem, what's the point of worrying?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The problem will be resolved one way or another, whether you worry about it or not.
Exactly.
You know, I used to be what I would call a catastrophizer. I would go into situations and in my mind's eye project negative outcomes, and every time when I was on the other side of it, realize that the situation was much easier than I ever foretold in my imagination. Why do we, mm-hmm. some of us, have a tendency to catastrophize, and how can we transcend this?
Well, it's a habit. You know, it says somewhere in the Old Testament, I think it's in the book of Proverbs, it says, as a dog returneth to his own vomit, so the fool returns to his folly. You know, we know it hurts. We know it sucks. But we know how to do it. And to a certain degree, we become identified with it. Oh, yeah, this is my story. It's as if we cultivate these, not only these catastrophes of the future that we worry about, but the traumatic stories of the past. We're fighting with our parents when our parents have been dead for 20 years. And we cultivate those like a photo album or like a garden. Okay, prune this one a little bit, water this one a little bit. It's so much work. So one of my favorite exercises that I give in the book and also in my workshops, where I travel around the country leading workshops, is very simply this. Drop your thoughts. Just for 5 seconds. Just drop it all, whatever it is. After 6 seconds, you can pick it all up again. But just, and there's ways you can cue yourself to do this. My favorite is to just like clap my hands in front of my eyes, just to kind of give myself a little shock. And whatever I'm in the middle of thinking about, just drop it. Absolutely. Now, because every time you drop your thoughts, it weakens their grip on you. You'll pick them up again, but the fact that you know that of your own volition, you can relax your grip on them, means that they start to lose their grip on you. The other aspect of that is to realize that every night when we go to sleep, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours a night, when you're deep asleep, in the state of dreamless sleep, where is your catastrophe that you're worrying about? Where's your sad history that you're worrying about? For that matter, where are your politics? When you're fast asleep, are you a Democrat or a Republican? And of course, you're none of the above, because you can't be any of those things without your thoughts. That stuff is it's made out of air. It's just made out of thoughts. And in fact, you drop all those thoughts and all that stuff you're so worried about and all that stuff you're so identified with, like your politics, like your religion, you drop it many, many times a day. You drop it a million times a day, but you pick it up a million and one times a day. Every time you're parallel parking in a tight space, you don't have any politics, because you don't have any bandwidth. You don't have any room to think about that. You're too. Anytime you sneeze, anytime you have an orgasm, anytime you're caught up watching a movie, you don't have any religion. That's all gone. You don't have any history. That's one of the reasons why we go to movies, to be caught up in them. Now, what we learn to do through meditation and through these little things we can do during the day, like dropping your thoughts, like another one we might talk about, breathing through your feet, is that you relax your grip on the stuff and you find that without going to sleep, without even closing your eyes and meditating, you can just drop the stuff and open up into the wonderful space of boundless freedom that's left when you relax your grip on all that other stuff.
Yeah, breathing through your feet is one of my favorite exercises that you offer in Fearless. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, in fact, this one is so popular, it's running on Oprah's website right now. This chapter from my book is running on Oprah.com. I love this because it's so simple. You can learn it in a few seconds. People who are hearing this can do this right now. First, just notice the soles of your feet. Put your attention there. Kind of feeling the soles of your feet or imagining the soles of your feet. Is it feeling? Is it imagining? Whatever. It doesn't matter. We have our attention on the soles of our feet. And as we naturally breathe in, just breathe in through the soles of your feet. As you breathe out through the soles of your feet. And just keep doing that. Breathing in through the soles of your feet. Breathing out through the soles of your feet. At your own tempo, so it might be fast or slow, deep or shallow. Don't try to push other things away. Other thoughts are going on in the background. Sound is going on in the background. It doesn't matter. Just a couple of breaths breathing in through the soles of your feet and out through the soles of your feet. And people usually notice, and people who are doing this, listening to me and doing this right now, just a couple of breaths like that, start to notice, there's a feeling of being quite settled. I got an email recently from someone saying, I've started breathing through my feet when I go to bed at night, and this stuff's going to put Ambien out of business.
Wonderful. And what is it about the soles of our feet that are so special?
Well, you know, there's a couple of levels talking about it. You can say that that's where we're grounded. One way I like to think about it is what's farthest away from your head. So, you know, when, let's say, you have fear of public speaking or you have fear of flying, and as you're fastening your seatbelt, getting ready to take off, you know, all the catastrophic thoughts are running around your mind about, you know, why the plane's going to crash, and you're feeling the room spinning or the cabin spinning and your mouth getting dry. And it's like you're caught up in your head and all this stuff. Now, if you're breathing through your feet, you can't be totally caught up in your head. Your attention is going to a place that's neutral, that's free of that, and that just physically is as far away from that as you can get in your body. Absolutely. And then on another level, I got an email from a yoga teacher in Texas that said, oh, of course, when you wrote that breathe through your feet thing, you were referring to the work of Professor such and such, who found the anatomical connection between the soles of the feet and the vagus nerve and the brain. So I said, yeah, okay, I guess I've seen that.
My guest is Dean Slider. He's the author of Fearless, Live Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. And by the way, the book is as funny and humorous and touching as Dean is on the air right now. It's a wonderful read. And we'll be back with more of Dean after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Dean Slider. He's the author of Fearless, Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. Dean, you have some appearances coming up, don't you?
I do. On Saturday, June 30th, I will be in Red Bank, New Jersey, which is not that far from New York City. Sunday and Monday, July 8th and 9th, I will be in Amesbury, Massachusetts. That's up in the northern part of Massachusetts. Sunday, July 15th in Big Sur. Sunday, August 5th, Orlando. Friday and Saturday, September 14th and 15th, Chattanooga, Tennessee. November 2nd, I'll be in New York City. November 4th in New Hope, PA. And I'm adding new dates all the time, and they're all on my website.
And the website, which website is that now?
That is fearlessbook.net.
Wonderful. So we look forward to seeing you at those locations. So we were talking before the break about
the fact that a lot of people today are dealing with a lot of anger. There's a lot of angry folks, or angry over a myriad of things. When someone finds themselves starting to get angry, how can they calm down before it becomes destructive and even self-destructive?
Right. Well, it turns out that the techniques for dealing with fear and anxiety are pretty much the same techniques for dealing with anger. You know, they're very different seeming symptoms, but they really come all out of the same root cause, and for that matter, addiction as well. They all come out of the same root cause ultimately, which is the feeling of fragmentation. The feeling of, in a kind of deep existential sense, a feeling of homelessness. You know, we all feel like we're a prodigal son. We feel orphaned. We feel cut off from some kind of wholeness of life. We feel that there was, you know, some just sense of okayness that we probably feel we, hopefully, at least we feel we tasted it in childhood. And then it becomes so inaccessible, just like it's somewhere over the rainbow. And we feel cut off from that wholeness that we somehow intuitively know we're supposed to be living. It's as if each of us feels that, oh, I'm just this puny little wave, and there's so many millions of other waves on the surface of the ocean, and most of them are bigger than I am, and they're sloshing up against me, and oh no, every wave sooner or later subsides into the ocean or crashes against the shore, aka I'm going to die one day, and it's a terrifying situation. And so we can react to that terror by going into anxiety. We can react to that terror by going into anger, finding, okay, who can I blame it on? Who can I, if I just get rid of this guy, if I just conquer that guy, if I just show myself superior to that guy, then I'll be all right. I will regain that lost sense of primal security. And of course, that never works. It can work for a little while. It can seem to work for a little while, but in the long run, it doesn't. So the deep solution that all the great sages, whether it's Jesus or the Buddha or Socrates or Al-Halaj or the Baal Shem Tov, what they all pointed to was, hey, guess what, little wave? You're not just a little wave. Look down into your base. There's this huge, boundless ocean which you're a part of. There's no such thing as a wave separate from an ocean. So what we do in all these meditative techniques is one way or another, whether it's by dropping your thoughts or breathing through your feet or sitting down practicing natural meditation, we're reconnecting with that ocean of beingness, which is what we most deeply are at our core. And then without trying to, okay, I'm going to manage my anger, I'm going to manage my fear, it just starts to become less. It starts to evaporate. You know, way back when I started with this stuff in 1968, and I started going to these weekend meditation retreats, and after I came back from my third or fourth one, my girlfriend at the time said to me, you know, every time you come back from one of these retreats, you're a little bit nicer. And I hadn't realized it. It was so natural. It just kind of sneaked up on me. Yeah, I kind of feel like the rough edges are getting smoothed.
Interesting. Yeah, I think everyone who's gotten onto some type of spiritual path or meditation path, people around them notice the change and the difference right away.
Yeah. And sometimes the people close to you notice it before you do, because you're right in the middle of the changes. But sometimes people will, and one of the things that I do as a teacher is point out to people the results of their practice, which they might miss otherwise. Like sometimes it'll be, you'll have a challenging day. You know, this thing hits the fan at work, and then this person is panicking at home, and then this thing is happening with your health, or, you know, you blow out the carburetor on your car, whatever. Go through the whole day, and at the end of the day, you're sitting at the edge of your bed, you're taking your socks off, and you go, you know, I kind of feel like not much happened today. Somehow, I managed to handle all that very skillfully, but sort of frictionlessly. I just kind of flowed through it all.
Absolutely, yeah. We unfortunately have a lot of our brothers and sisters today dealing with addictions ranging from cell phone overuse to actual severe opioid abuse. What do you share in Fearless to help those who are dealing with addictions?
Yeah, I have a lot about it throughout the book, and then two specific chapters, one on cell phone addiction. It's called Meditating with the iPhone Zero. And what I do there is I take the cell phone addiction and I flip it around. I turn it into a form of meditation. And the way this works is, okay, you're standing in line to order your coffee or to get your prescription filled or whatever it is. And we've all seen it, and most of us have done it, which is the moment you realize you're standing there with not much going on, your hand automatically goes into your pocket, and you whip out your phone. Okay, let me check my email, check my messages, see if the president tweeted something new and exciting. In other words, we become addicted to this constant stimulation. It's as if it's never okay to just be, to be just standing in line with nothing going on and just digging nothing going on, you know? So the way that this works, this meditating with the iPhone Zero, is very simple. The next time you're standing in line or, you know, your date goes to the bathroom, you're sitting by at the table by yourself, and you feel that urge to reach for your phone, don't. Just don't do it. Now, what's going to happen is you're going to get hit by this big wave of anxiety. Like, oh, yeah, but what about maybe there's a maybe, you know, and just know that wave of anxiety is going to hit you. It's supposed to hit you. Let it pass through you. Don't try to suppress it. Don't try to feel spiritual and no anxiety. Just let it fully hit you. And then once that wave hits you, that wave will pass. And on the backside of that wave is something called peace. Mm. And self-sufficiency. And just, hey, I'm standing here in line at the CVS, and I'm just fine without anything. This is one of the reasons, you know, I work with prisoners in maximum security. And every once in a while, one of them will be put up on charges, and he'll go into administrative segregation, which is solitary confinement for a few weeks or months even, with no stimulation, no reading, no TV, no nothing. And when that happens, they're really glad they know how to meditate. They really know how to do nothing and have it be delicious.
How may we extend what you share into our homes, communities, and workplaces?
Well, yeah, you know, whether it's the home, the workplace, the community, we go from the one situation to the next with the same nervous system. You know, the one thing that's in common with all of those is our awareness. And so if your awareness is open and bright and clear, that's going to manifest in the way you get along with the people at home and the way you get along with people in the workplace. If your consciousness is all caught up in worry or hostility, or, you know, just you're wearing blinders of some kind, or you're caught up in some habitual thoughts because you've not been practicing dropping your thoughts, and you just get kind of blinded by those thoughts, those set ideas, and you become narrow in your thinking, that's going to affect how you are at home, at work, everywhere. For that matter, coming back to addiction for a moment, obviously, if you're addicted, whether you're addicted to, you know, cookies or to sex or gambling or heroin or opioids, whatever it is. And I deal with quite a number of alcoholics and addicts. A lot of them come to our sessions here in our home in Santa Monica. And I had this one terrific experience, which I write about in the book. This one girl, about 19 or 20, came to our session a few times, didn't say anything. And then one night she was about to leave and she pulled me aside. She said, I wanted to tell you, I'm a heroin addict. I've been clean for 6 months. In the meditation tonight, I went into a place of such deep peace and healing and fulfillment. I didn't think I could ever feel that way again in this life without drugs. Mm. Mm. And Yeah, you hear something like that and you go, okay, we're getting somewhere with this stuff.
His book is called Fearless, Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. His name is Dean Slider. Dean, please tell our listeners one more time where they can find out about your work, your book, and all that you do.
Right. And again, just to be clear, because we're on the radio, the title, it's two words. It's not fearless. It's fearless.
Correct.
You don't have to be fearless. I'm not fearless. But if you can just start to fear less, it means you're already past the worst, that things are, the light is just going to be increasing. So you can get my book anywhere that books are sold, your local bookstore or Amazon. You can go to my website, fearlessbook.net. where you can read a chapter. You can read chapters of all my books there online, and also you can access the guided meditation audio tracks, and you can check my touring schedule where I'm adding new dates all the time.
Dean, thank you so much for joining us. We have to have you back on to talk about natural meditation in the not-too-distant future.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Victor. This has been great.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. And listeners, I want to thank you. This is the 100th show of Destination Unlimited. I'd like to take an opportunity now to thank all of the guests and authors who have graced our air and pod waves, the publicists and agents who have made the connections with these guests for us, Liani and Chris Buck, who met me at a wedding in 2016 and offered me the opportunity to do this show, and especially you, our listeners, who welcome me into your minds for 57 minutes every week. I feel very at home there and very grateful. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.